Welcome to Barry Maguire's Tales from the Trenches, real-life stories of Canadian real estate investors. Learn more at barrymaguire.ca.
Hi, everyone. Barry Maguire here. Today's tale is the second in our ongoing series on permits. Yes, permits, those nasty bits of paper that municipalities like towns and cities and counties require before you can do some work on your property. So typically, you start with what's called a development permit at the planning office in your municipality. The development permit kind of goes over what it is you plan to do and gives you a broad brushstroke approval or maybe a conditional approval for your concept. So it's just really saying, yeah, can you build that deck? Can you build that hot tub? Is that allowed? And if so, that's really what the development permit is all about. Next step is the building permit. And that's where trouble shows up. Where the development permit is the broad brushstroke document, the building permit, now that gets into the details of your project. So having said that, I just want to say that I think it's important to know that the permit landscape has changed really over the last few years. And I think part of that is that we're now living in a digital age with lots more ability of municipalities to track things and to make sure that things are happening the way they should. You know, in days gone by, permits and requirements for permits were kind of often ignored. But now municipalities they're much more vigorous about enforcing their permit requirements. So let me give you an example. In the city of Edmonton, they didn't used to pay very much attention to illegal suites unless somebody complained. I remember people saying, Edmonton is full of illegal suites and the city doesn't care. Now, on the other hand, if somebody complains, a tenant or a neighbor, they would come and inspect and maybe do something about it. But because of the demand for more rental housing, the city changed the rules. Instead of there being only a few places, a few communities in the city where you could put in a legal secondary suite, the city changed the rules so that zoning allows secondary suites and garden suites and garage suites really almost anywhere in the city. So now that you can put them almost anywhere, and because the city is very cooperative and friendly about helping people do suites properly, to make illegal suites legal, instead of barely enforcing the illegal suite side of things, now the city vigorously enforces illegal suites. They look for illegal suites and they try and shut people down. So that's what I mean when I say the permit landscape has changed. And I think that kind of attitude is much more of the municipal attitude all the way throughout Alberta. Now, having said that, let's get on to today's tale. A client emailed me to tell me about his experience in trying to get a permit for his new secondary suite. He gave me a really nice email, so I'm going to paraphrase what he told me. If you download the text part of this tale from the trench, you'll be able to see exactly what the email said. But let me paraphrase. Good morning, Barry. We came across a house in Fort Saskatchewan. We thought it would be perfect for a secondary suite. Corner lot, double driveway, double detached garage. The property had room to park 10 vehicles. And folks, I want you to remember this. The property as it stood had room to park 10 vehicles. Plus there was parking on the street. So that's the way the parking was before it would bother any neighboring property. I checked into the zoning. It was zoned to allow a secondary suite. That's perfect because I have the experience and the expertise and the time to actually install that suite. So we bought the house in June with a possession of August 7th. While we were waiting for our possession day, I looked at getting into the permits, get those all set up and ready to go so we could start the reno process on our possession day. I talked to the city and they told me we didn't meet the parking requirements and we would need to add an additional double parking pad to get the permits approved. And we couldn't apply for the permits until the day we owned the property, which would be August 7th. And I'm trying to do this in June. And we couldn't start construction until the approval of the permits, which would be 4 to 6 weeks after our purchase date of August 7th. This wasn't good because I only had a 3-month timeline to complete the whole project. So what the city was telling me was a huge setback. However, I'm a positive guy. I'm not to be deterred. I looked at other suited properties in Fort Saskatchewan, and interesting, I found that very few of them had the proper permit requirements, but they were still legal. How did that happen? I kept digging and I found that for the last 20 permits that had been appealed on the parking issue, all those permits won because of adequate existing parking and therefore did not require additional parking. So segue here, folks. What my client is saying is that the last 20 permits that had been issued were denied because they didn't have the requisite parking, actual parking pads on the site. So they appealed and were granted. So back to planning and development department, we came up with a solution that would allow me to start construction on the possession day and maybe save me money on additional parking. So we applied for our secondary suite permit, knowing and with the intention of getting it denied. Then we would appeal the additional parking requirement, just like those other 20 people did. And we were very confident we would win because 20 in a row had already won. Seemed logical to me. And we'd also apply for our basement development permit to start the construction. So we're trying to kill a few birds with one stone. So we bought the property. 6 weeks later, after we bought, the parking appeal day came. I went in to the development appeal board. I had all kinds of information, including all those recent approvals, the less strict parking guidelines in neighboring cities, because Fort Saskatchewan has terribly strict guidelines. I had photos about how much street parking we had, that we had the bus stop out front, and proof showing that newer duplex development doesn't have really any parking. I was very confident after making my presentation that I would win. And guess what? They denied me. I was shocked. A week later, you know, this crushing bit of news saying they denied my appeal. Now, having taken your focus workshops, Barry, you always tell us have a plan B. I was very glad I did have a plan B because when I lost the appeal, I was already prepared. So off to plan B. I would just meet the parking requirements and get a standard permit. No issues. So segue again, what my client is saying is that to get a regular permit, as long as he added 2 extra parking spaces on a concrete parking pad, that would meet permit requirements. So that was his plan B. He was just going to add the extra spaces. I called the city, asked them what the minimum parking requirements would be so that I could obtain the permit and move forward. I was absolutely flabbergasted when they told me because I'd lost my appeal, I couldn't reapply for the same permit for 6 months. Now, I'm just going to pause there. I want everybody to think about this. What he says is he's now going to apply for the permit and not ask for a variance. He's not going to try and convince the city that there's lots of parking. He's saying, okay, fine. I will put in the 2 extra parking spaces just like you want, and I'll build it up on that basis. I had to go back and make sure I understood, and guess what I got? A firm no. I tried to talk to the manager of planning and development. He said he would talk to the director of planning. He wasn't sure if anything could be done. A week later, I got a call from the director of planning. He said, the only thing I can do, again, is reapply for the permit. Once they deny the permit, based on the rule that once a permit is denied, you can apply for 6 months, I could file another appeal. This time, my appeal would ask for a relaxation on the 6-month clause that says you can't apply for 6 months. My goodness, this is getting complicated. In the meantime, I actually constructed the parking pad, which met the additional on-site parking requirement. So this is kind of like, what's the famous writer's name? Franz Kafka, where his protagonist gets trapped in a bureaucratic maze that he can't get out of. That's what I'm feeling like is going on with my client. So he says, and I repeat, in the meantime, I actually constructed the parking pad, which met the additional on-site parking requirement. On November 7th, exactly 3 months later, I'm sitting in front of the appeal board once again, asking them to allow this permit, showing I showed them I've built the parking pad and now I comply. Now, I left that appeal hearing not as confident as I did at the last one. I was very confident at the last one and I felt so badly when they denied me. But off I went. I was very stressed out and waiting my week to see what they would do. Good news, they went in my favor and I won that appeal. So now, for the third time, I can reapply for the secondary suite permit at a cost of, are you ready, $600 each time. So that's three permits at $600 each. And I'm just waiting now for the approval. That approval came in on November 27th. I had the final inspection on November 28th. Long story short, I learned a lot about how the permit process works, and I learned it the hard way. I hope you can share this story with others in hopes they won't make the same costly mistakes that I made. Thanks again for all your help, Barry, Sam, and Wendy. I've changed their names just because that's what we do in these Tales from the Trenches. We never name names. All right, so that's what my client told me, and I guess, you know, to some extent, all is well that ends well. It just would have been so much better if the town had reasonably agreed with how my client proposed to deal with the parking issue. It just seems so obvious that the application should have resulted in an approved permit, like other similar permit applications, and then he would not have had to go to the time and trouble and major expense of pouring concrete for the two extra required spaces. I think the bill for that extra concrete was $8,000. And what about the extra time, big stress, and two extra permit applications at $600 each? So, tough situation for my client. So what do we learn out of this? We always like to figure out what the lessons learned are. And these lessons learned don't lend themselves to kind of a 10-word lesson learned, do this, do that in 10 words. It's a bit more complicated, but let's see what we got. Lesson learned number one. I think the big lesson is that we all have to understand that any permit application that doesn't exactly, and I mean exactly, meet the rules, is said to need a variance. And, very important, any permit application that needs a variance is a discretionary application. When something is discretionary, to a large extent, the decision is wide open. Discretion means that whoever's making the decision has the room to go this way or that way or some other way. And municipalities have these things called development appeal boards, commonly referred to as DAB. So if you disagree with the decision of a planning officer, you can appeal to the DAB. Membership on those boards change. When membership changes, policies change. And that's what happened here to our client. The last 20 people who got those positive decisions went to a development appeal board that had different members on it than the board that my client went to. So to sum up this lesson learned, when you're asking for a variance, you can't depend on previous positive discretionary decisions being applied in your favor. You just can't depend on it. Number two, you know, and I guess we all kind of know this, but let's just say it. Number two, permits equal bureaucracy. And you know what bureaucracy likes? Bureaucracy equals rules. Bureaucrats love rules. And they also believe and they enforce the truism that rules are not, repeat that, rules are not meant to be broken, which can lead to illogical circumstances. Specifically, I'm just repeating and pointing out the rule which said that Having lost his appeal, my client couldn't apply for the same permit for 6 months. That's just silly. It's silly that he would have been applying, you know, for the permit without a variance. In other words, he would be meeting all the permit rules exactly. Why does he have to wait 6 months? Because it's the rule. And therefore, you have to know the rules. Sum up number two is, you have to know the rules. And lesson number three. I know you've heard this before. I say it a lot, but you have to have a plan B. Most of us don't make permit applications, even those of us that do lots of this kind of work, fix and flip or installing secondary suites, most of us don't make permit applications on any kind of regular basis. So understandably, none of us, even more experienced of us, are not completely familiar with the rules and subtleties as we might be. So when you don't know a subject upside down, backwards and forwards, stuff comes up. Things happen. Insure yourself against unexpected circumstances by always having a plan B. And that's it, folks. Number two in our Tales from the Trenches on permits. Keep listening for the third in the series coming up soon.
Thanks for listening to Barry Maguire's Tales from the Trenches. And for more valuable investing insights, go to barrymaguire.ca.